We're
recording and Chris is already confused.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm glad we're straight into it, because I'll tell you what. I don't know if my approach to an episode is massively tempered by expectations, but this is the best episode I've seen. Like, in terms of going in, maybe the most fun I've had watching an episode.
Ooh.
Really? That's
yeah.
I was thinking it's... Because, you know, finale, because this show doesn't follow the cadences of a normal show. Like, you know, last season kind of had the big finale in the middle and then kind of a finale at the end. But this is very much continuing from that finale. Like, the finale didn't culminate. This is continuing.
Yeah, well, it's because of where the show divides it up in relation to the books. Like, the first book finishes in the middle of series two of the show.
But it's also because we've got different...
We've got a bit of a division here again as well.
We've got different plot lines, and some of them have a sort of a termination, while other ones are carrying, like...
We got
a high point on Venus with the explodey view, but the stuff on the yacht was really, you know...
It was in the middle still, yeah.
They were still... they were still like escaping from the yacht, right? Yeah.
But I think that going to the books not quite lining up with the seasons, I think it works to the show's advantage because it does give it an unpredictable, kind of surprising sort of rhythm.
Yeah. This gave me a lot. Yeah, like, I don't know. I really enjoyed this more than I thought, because when you go into a normal show's first episode of a series, you expect it to be a lot of setting the scene.
Wasn't it? The first three or four episodes of season two are very much like it meets some new characters.
And I was kind of surprised. I also noticed that Theo, as we learn his name to be, was actually dumped in a locker.
Oh, right.
And he's bruised up as well, yeah.
A little bit bruised up and has a 10-inch dildo up his ass. So
I didn't spot that, but yeah, I'll take it much for it.
And that's the girth.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, you know, you gotta get your W's where you can.
Yep.
I also, as well, on that particular yacht, I kind of think Avicerella looks really kind of hot when she's a bit more like disheveled, rugged, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Anybody else notice the bit where she's talking to Theo and she like rubs his from his shoulders down his chest?
Yes.
It's like that actor must have had a good day, I'll tell you. You know,
Bobby and Avicerella.
Yeah. And he gets to fly the ship.
Yeah,
briefly.
Yeah. So yeah. I there was a part of me that was thinking that Theo, Avicerella, Bobby, and Spy would sort of take commandeer the yacht, and they'd have like Rocinante too.
Oh, that would be very cool. I would enjoy that.
That would be a good, because I don't mind Theo. I don't know how long we're with him for the show. I can imagine him being quite, you know, jettisoned off relatively quickly. He doesn't seem like he's built for
a
major character
role.
Yeah.
Did you notice as well in this episode that Avicerella calls Cotiar by his name, but not to his face? Only when she's talking about him, not to him.
Yeah. I still like the banter of Bobby and Spy, because they seem they're probably naturally going to have a lot in common, but also I think there's a lot of sexual magnetism with Spy, you know? Like, he's just a flirt.
Yeah.
You know? I think he's just like... Because he's smooth. Spies are smooth, right? Like, it's just...
Yeah, I only really see the flirtatiousness with... he's friendly with Bobby, but I only see the flirtatiousness with Avicerella, really.
Oh, it's an entirely different kind of flirting.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've got... It's like tough... Like, you got, like, sparring with Bobby...
Yeah.
Well, and a little bit and a bit of, like, you know, playful you know, stuff with Avicerella. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm just putting it down to the fact that Spy's kind of smooth, really.
He's smooth. You know, he's definitely smooth. Yeah.
He's definitely smooth, yeah.
So why was this I mean, you kind of almost sounded like you were saying like this is your favorite episode, or I mean, I know it wasn't quite that, but
in some ways it was, because I know enough of the show to go in with expectations. Like the first episode of the show would not have been my favorite, just simply because it's such a disorientating circumstance. You spend too much time getting to grips with, well, not too much time, but you know what I mean. Like show's first episode is its best, right? Like that's
You're introduced to a lot of characters and
on a rewatch. It's nice on a rewatch. It's nice. It's like, oh, Miller again, and he's got his hair. And
but this one is, I go into it partly with low expectations, because it's like, okay, is this just setting the scene for the season? But it wasn't. It was carrying on and building stuff, and there were several revelations, character revelations, that I think are particularly interesting that we'll obviously talk about.
I like that it opens with essentially, well, not opens, but near the beginning, there's a sort of new news broadcast just making it clear that, like, the proton molecule's out of the bag. Everybody knows about it now. That's public knowledge.
What people are calling, what several sources are calling the proton molecule.
And you got the different, they completely shift from one rhetoric to the other in the broadcasts. So you've got you got the Earth, they do the Earth voiceover a bit, then they do Mars, which is again sort of slightly tailored but kind of basically in line with the story, and then is someone doing the Belters one? Is it Kamina doing the Belters?
I don't think they really have their own broadcast system, do they? They're more like we've talked about before, more sort of oral tradition almost.
We see telescreens on
Eros, but I think that's coming out of Earth and Mars. I think they watch Earth and Mars media.
I mean, what about Tycho? They'll have something on Tycho.
Internal communication, but like a broadcast. I think it's a bit like, you know, imagine being in a very poor, like, third world country that doesn't really, or you're just going to get media from, you know, wherever.
Yeah, but I mean, but the thing is with their technology, if you've got communications, you've got broadcast ability, right? Because basically,
but there's more to it to produce a show or a news broadcast or whatever than there is.
I'm not sending
a message, you know.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily. I don't know what I'm really thinking. I don't even know what I'm like.
I'm not sure what you're talking about, to be honest.
There'll be like broadcasts around Tycho that will just give general information and
announcements and stuff. Yeah, I'm sure there are.
And stuff, and those announcements will probably be they will be angled for, you know, in favor of the Belters, obviously,
again. But I mean, it is kind of, they're kind of anarchists, you know. We've got an authoritarian Mars, a capitalist, you know. Anarchists probably aren't going to run the best TV stations in the world, you know what I mean?
How do people like Anderson Dawes get their name out there across the belt without some kind of Belter broadcast network?
I think, word of mouth. I think it is. I think they are fundamentally like an oral tradition. Like they when they were talking about, let's make Miller and Julie into a story, you know, that I think the implication was, I mean, maybe, you know, some kind of technology.
Well, hang on a minute.
Just passing it from person to person.
Well, I the way I imagine it is like WhatsApp videos. Like you share it.
Yeah. But I tell you what the Belter equivalent of news broadcast is. It's when somebody gets literally on a soapbox and starts shouting to everybody. We see it in the first few episodes of the first season.
Yep.
And we see it after whatever it is where Diogo's doing it. You know, he's talking about Miller's story.
See, the way that it works in my head...
And people are coming and going at all these places near the docks.
Yeah.
And the stories carry through the belt that way. Yeah.
But people can watch videos on their phone that they send to each other. So... You know, like, for example, when
Diogo's uncle is on a ship, he's watching assumed to be recordings of that dude speaking back on...
We're not saying they don't have technology. What we're saying is they don't have studios and...
Like a formalised...
Production.
Yeah. So the way I think about it...
I'm still not sure, though, where you're going with it, where you started with this, talking about we heard... different points of view or something. I'm not sure what you mean by that. I mean, I just watched the episode again and I don't...
Well, yeah, in terms of the news broadcast.
You're talking about previously on The Expanse.
Earth's take on it and then Mars' take on it, right?
In the background also, sort of thing.
And also, I found out, according to the subtitles on this one, that the theme tune is sung in Norwegian.
Oh, is it? I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, according to the subtitles, I'm assuming the subtitles.
I assumed it was either gibberish or Latin.
Well, Norwegian, so
that's cool.
The way I think about how they would do it would be like, if you think of Mars and the Earth as having, you know, traditional media as we know it, and then like the belt might have something more akin to like, yeah, Fediverse or TikTok,
yeah,
or
I think so,
social
yeah.
media type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to me, in my the way I think of it in my head, that's all the same, really. Structurally, it's different, but like, if you have a message, it can reach whoever it needs to reach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like, it's just different ways of doing the same thing, or different, you know, organizational structures.
But, yeah,
you know, it's yeah. So Avicerella and a spy, and we see the Razorback. He didn't sell the Razorback after all.
We do see the Razorback, yeah.
I mean, I think we were all thinking that it was the Razorback. Did they say it by name, or did they just...
No, not previously, but it was, yeah, after meeting Julie Mao and knowing who this is, like, if you hear about a racing, you're yeah. Mm.
So the one thing I'm wondering is, because he talks in one of the first episodes, like episode one or two, about selling the Razorback. Like, he is... argue probably like the richest man in the solar system.
I mean, he's up there, yeah, for sure.
He's up there. So, why does he need to sell it, or is it just that he doesn't need to sell it? He's not.
That's just him being. That's him being petty.
Yeah, he's just trying to manipulate his daughter. Basically, yeah.
I mean, he probably didn't even bother to fill out the forms or whatever because it's just still hooked up to the yacht.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because he's not.
I think it was an empty threat.
Hmm. Well, it evidently proved to be an empty threat, he might not want to sell it after she's gone missing, because, you know, that's...
Well, he knows she's dead as well.
Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah, he does know she's dead. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. Maybe it comes with a ship. It's like, do you know that those big luxurious buses that have a car that sits underneath them? It's like... No. I saw it on TV. It's basically... So it's like the thing that, like... You know, it's one of those things that the rich and famous have, which is like a tour bus kind of thing. So you got the main part of the tour bus, which is like your living room, your bedroom, your bathroom, all that kind of thing. And then in the sort of the hold, where like if you were going on a normal person's coach, where they put store the luggage under in between the wheels type of thing.
Yeah.
There's a sports. They keep a sports car, like one of those really low down sports cars, so you can park your ridiculously luxurious.
That's like Saturday morning kids cartoon shit. That is.
Yeah, yeah, it's more money than sense money.
Also a bit like luxury yachts with a helicopter on them.
It's a land yacht, or you know, like a skiff. But yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Because to be fair, I like the idea. There's something about me that likes the idea of living on a bus or living on the road.
But living
like,
mobile, yeah.
Living mobile, but like if you're driving, you can't.
The Who do a song about that? Going mobile. It's a song by the Who.
But then the one thing about it that does always sort of brings me down and puts me off about it is one crash and you've lost everything.
Everything you own. I mean, I guess insurance, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it'd have to be a pretty devastating crash to actually destroy all your belongings, and in which case you're probably fucked.
Yeah, but it also means that you can't move, or if you've got to put it in for a service or to get it repaired. That's like your home that's going.
Yeah,
in
but you tow a small vehicle with it. Just what you were saying.
unless you get a smaller vehicle, you just take stuff you can like generally afford to use, lose or something. But anyway, that aside. Sorry, tangent aside. Also, one thing I do notice, I feel like I've noticed, but correct me if I've misnoticed, Bobby on the outside of the yacht seems to be a lot more realistic than Prax and Naomi on the...
It was CGI this time, and it's wobbly CGI in places, I think. I don't think... It doesn't make it more... Like, I don't care. It's storytelling. Yeah. I don't give a shit what the quality is, but yeah, it did it's noticeable.
It did give slight Buzz Lightyear vibes, type of thing.
Yeah,
you know, actually, the thing is where Bobby did slip. It did feel very sort of like dramatic in a very movie-esque way.
Yeah,
because it's like, oh, her gloves are just failing, but no, it's okay. They regain it, and
yeah.
you know, it just seemed
slightly unnecessary, to be honest.
Mm. I agree. Yeah, I feel a little bit patronized with stuff like that. Like, there was
already enough at stake.
Yeah.
She's just like, yeah. See, that's a bit like, yeah. Like,
I think.
Okay, that's.
I mean, the show changed to be changed a different channel.
Sci-fi.
Yeah.
Oh, does that happen now?
That happens in this series 3 is when it happens, the first one. And then I feel like maybe they got a bit of a budget specifically for CG or something, and they said, we've got to do something with this. Or maybe they just wanted to try things out, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been very expensive to film. Unlike the one with Holden and Naomi, like, they would have needed like a sort of wall set and wires, and yeah, it would have been.
Although, well, that's the thing. I was thinking about what you were saying the other day with Alex's useless scene where he spins through the air and drinks his energy drink, not beer. I don't know how expensive that would have actually have been to film, because they would have already had the existing set of the Ross Nanti, right? That would be sets that they sort of own and reuse. Yeah,
like, CGI is relatively cheap compared to practical, you know. In
you're sinking a bit, Drew. Camera wise, you need to be.
Oh no!
and the practical effect that you did see, the spinning wire, was very obviously a spinning wire. Like, it was not a particularly CGI. Like, I think give me a some money. I think I could put together something very similar.
It was very simple. Yeah,
in fact, I might even go so far as to say that scene was that could be a padding scene.
I think it was either the writers feeling that Alex hasn't got enough characterization, or Alex complaining about not having enough scenes, or something, you know, the actor complaining about not having enough scenes, and them just writing him. Because he's got a similar scene where the one where he contacts his wife,
in this episode,
which just makes him look like an arsehole.
He does, doesn't he?
Well, I think the point is he is an arsehole.
No, he is an arsehole.
That's kind of the...
It's like, I don't love the character. You know, he's my least... He's probably my least favourite character on the show, actually. And now
even over DeGraff.
Well, no, because... that's kind of different.
No, DeGraff was a character with... probably more complexity to him than Alex.
He made me react strongly to him, whereas Alex, when Alex is on screen, I'm just like, oh. You know, it's like, I don't think he's a good enough actor to pull off what they're trying to pull off with him. Plus, the kind of boring scenes also.
Yeah, it's a combination.
Yeah,
like him and his wife. I don't give a shit about him and his wife. I just don't. Mm. Like, I get that it's characterization for us, but I just don't fucking care.
It came across like it was like, you know what? Now I'm a bit of a space cowboy. I actually kind of realized I want a divorce.
But this is his wife and son that he hasn't contacted for. As far as they knew, she was dead. He was dead. But then they presumably found out he wasn't dead because of the Canterbury stuff.
Mm.
And he hasn't contacted them for, you know, well, he said to his son, you might not recognize me. So it's been a fucking while, right?
That's such an asshole move.
Yeah, and then to say the reason I didn't come back home is because I prefer being out here to being with you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which, like, appreciate the honesty, but like, tact.
Yeah, you can re-record messages like that.
And I think it is sort of clumsy stumbling is supposed to be endearing, but it doesn't. It just comes across.
Yeah,
as like,
it doesn't. It doesn't work. Yeah.
He is. Yeah, like it's. He's just ditched his family. Like, I can understand if it's a partner, but you've got a family. You can't just cut.
I mean, if you've got to leave, but like, leave. Tell them what's happening. Like, communicate. Mm. Let them know what's happening, and then leave. Don't leave.
And
then,
to be honest, if you've got a kid, you should be sending money back.
But then
he's like, you might not recognize me, or like he's sending that message as if this is the first time he's made contact for a long time.
So maybe there's like a regular money thing. I don't know.
Maybe
I'm sure he mentioned something about that. Something around
military
that.
Pension,
I can't
or
remember.
Military severance package or something. Yeah, and maybe
them some money.
I mean, anyway, so he's still a shitbag.
Yeah,
yeah, and a boring shitbag. So,
yeah.
You know. At least DeGraff had motivations. You know, at least
that's it. Yeah.
I have to say that watching it again with you has made me realize how I'd filled in a lot of Alex myself. And,
I know what you mean.
As Drew points
out,
once you watch it again, you see that he doesn't really, come up with the goods, you know, a lot of the time.
Well, I don't know if you've laid this in my mind and I'm just reaffirming it, or whether or not it's something that I'm picking up on. I think this is something that you've mentioned I've started picking up on it, is that it seems that the actor wants Alex to be a different character to who Alex is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we've mentioned that, yeah.
Like, I think you get that. The story adds to that, but I think you get that just from watching him. He's like, he's trying to, I think he's trying to push the character in a different direction than the writing is going in.
Mm.
I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, because if he was a bit more like a Captain Jack Sparrow, you could say, oh, he's a scamp, isn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly, yeah.
Did you notice as well, sorry, this is, I don't want to derail this, but something has popped into my head before I forget.
Derail this?
Yeah, I know. Is that they all had slightly different haircuts and stuff at the start of the series because it had been off the air for a while, because it had been sort of cancelled and brought back, sort of thing.
Actually, Holden looked a bit slimmer.
He looked skinnier. Alex and Amos both looked like they'd had a haircut, you know, like they both had completely different hair and then had it recut, and it just didn't look quite the same. Alex particularly, I thought, had shorter hair.
I was thinking about this the other day.
Silly little thing, but you know.
You know when I was picking up that Miller only seems to have one, well, most people seem to only have one set of clothes. Although I do like the fact that Prax is in a slightly ill-fitting one's overall because they've obviously given him like.
Yeah, I mean they've got the fake gas hauler overalls. They've got Martian stuff, but obviously they don't wear that out and about because that would definitely attract attention, but they do have the armor and stuff, you know.
That's scary looking armor though. Yeah. You know, you show up in that armor, someone's going to probably.
Well, so it's only marginally scary when it's compared with Bobby's power armor, but yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But also, yeah, I was thinking about this, like, you know, when I mentioned that, Miller in particular just seemed to have one set of outfits. He seemed to have like that navy blue shirt and some black trousers and boots and stuff. And I reckon I know a way to rationalize this, but I don't know if this is just.
Does it matter?
Yes, I think it does. Okay. Because if you've got one set of clothes, are you going to wear them for weeks on end? Like, you know, I like to get a few wears out of stuff, you know, but like, I mean, that's like what Miller did. Like,
if it wasn't for different logos and things on my shirts, you'd probably think I was wearing the same clothes all the time.
I mean,
same.
I've got a lot of black t-shirts or very dark colored t-shirts.
Yeah,
like.
I think Miller is
the kind of person who has a look, and so probably most of his wardrobe is just that look.
And I suspect as well with Miller that it's not just utilitarian like me and Drew. It's more like he goes for that look and sticks with it rather than that's what he happens to wear.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of
on the Rossi, it's their work overalls, so they put that. You know, it's mostly they're just wearing work overalls, which you don't, you know, wash that. You wash those about once every 5 years, you know.
Yeah. And then you've got your under t-shirts or your t-shirt.
Yeah, they got like t-shirt and pants or whatever underneath them.
Yeah, and they all wear. They all wear black t-shirts, which I'm guessing is like a standard issue. You pick a rack of 20 of them off the shelf and then just like you're sorted type of thing. I get that, but I reckon that particularly within space environments where space might be a necessity, that in your bunk you might have a little miniature washer dryer or a space version thereof. You pop your clothes in.
No
10 minutes
no
later
way. No, that's no. ridiculous though.
That Why is that ridiculous?
Well, it's a ridiculous waste of energy and space.
Yeah, there'd be a laundry room. I mean, whether there is a laundry room on the ship, I don't know. But if there was going to be any solution for that, it would be a laundry room.
Yeah, it'd be a laundry machine. Space. It wouldn't be like you get your own private washing system. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, but it'd be a
think
space
about a
thing,
ship or so think about it. A ship or a submarine or you know any of that sort
well,
of stuff. You're not
going to
have.
Thing.
Remember, they it's a say, military vessel as well.
They say on submarines that the smell is fucking diabolical.
Yeah,
so I'm
yeah.
just going to put that one out there. Don't know if spaceships are the same, but they're not.
I gather they're not the most fresh of places.
Yeah,
space station
I,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but old space stations. I don't know. Like, if you're comparing them to submarines, and submarines are known to be stinky. I don't know, but like they
space
probably
station
have...
would be interesting because there's going to be no. Like little to no bacteria up there, other than what you carry with you.
Yeah, but that's going to get put through and recycled plenty.
Oh yeah, yeah, but I imagine there's not. It's like it's pretty a pretty antiseptic environment. I would imagine
sterile.
Sterile. Thank you. That's the word.
Yeah,
Not where people have been. I mean, you can't. You know, people are dirty.
Oh yeah,
germ
yeah, no,
covered.
Yeah, yeah.
Things,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, what are their indoor clothes like? Like, I mean, do they? Because in
what do you mean indoor? They wear.
You don't wear a jumpsuit when you're just dossing around.
They do. Though.
Well, we see that
them.
From time to
sometimes
time.
Sometimes what
you
they do is take the as they roll the top down and tie up the arms
yeah,
as like
yeah.
a belt. You see them do that,
and we see them on when they're partying on Tycho. We see them in their civvies, as you know.
Yeah, they got a couple of things like that.
It's all very plain, though. It tends to be like this is from memory, but like you know, sort of t-shirts and cargo pants, tight trousers, and that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Got very
utilitarian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah,
I think you're expecting very... luxury yacht from every single.
Well, no, I'm just berth, wondering what the deal is if everyone seems to be wearing the same outfit day in day out for weeks on end, like. Are they just because maybe they're space washing machines? You can just you put your clothes in, and it takes just 10 minutes because they're better in the future. And therefore, you just take your clothes off, put them in the machine.
If you like, Chris. Okay. Okay. We're not going to argue with you because,
like, why is like it's like. But it is a thing that needs to be done, right? Laundry
well,
is a thing that
I,
needs to be
I,
done.
Well, they need to
I
go
have...
for a shit as well, but they don't discuss that.
But we know, we've seen them take a piss, like, you know.
Space
I have strong. I have strong feelings about this in Star Trek, because in Star Trek, I'm like, they've got teleportation technology. If they don't just teleport shit out of your colon, then they fucking need, like, that would make me angry if they don't. It, like, still making people go to the toilet after we don't
but
need
isn't
to
there
anymore.
Some... There's some need to push that through, I'm sure.
Ah, they can fix that. They've got
space
medicine. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, honestly, you guys are thinking an awful lot about things that aren't really that relevant. I mean, I can see these conversations coming up sometimes, that's fine, but... Yeah.
This is a show about life in space.
This is,
They've got diets.
I'm too busy. I mean, at the moment, I'm just thinking about Cara G and those little training shorts. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
We know their diets, right? Like, we know that they largely just very efficient.
Nutrient type stuff.
Lasagna. They've got a lasagna based diet.
Hmm.
Well, I'm assuming that the lasagna just comes out on special occasions, and it does look a bit like sawdust and spit, right? Like it's
they've got some plants in there as well, you know.
They got some plants. They can put some, you know, cress on it or whatever. It's you know mustard
whatever.
Cress or whatever. But like, yeah, they just and but like, yeah, we know that they take a piss. So we just never see laundry. Not just in the Expanse.
Yeah, but we don't see them having a shit.
It.
Every episode.
Why are you focusing
well?
On having a shit? Why is having the shit the thing that you're going
okay,
to?
Okay, we don't see them having a piss every episode then.
We don't see them brushing their teeth.
Yeah, I mean.
Don't see them cleaning their shoes.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff.
They don't clean their shoes. Their shoes are raggedy, you know, they're well worn.
When I was young, my dad made us polish our shoes every day after school.
Every day.
With boot polish and a cloth, you know, a brush and then a cloth. Yeah. The smell was great. Boot polish smells amazing.
It does smell good. Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's a smell of nostalgia in the past.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they came out with this stuff that you just sort of squish this sort of cream stuff and then brush
a
it around.
Sponge, but, like a spongy,
yeah, it was never
dabby thing.
Very good.
Yeah. I mean, I would be interested to know how the shitter works as well, but...
Oh, we know you would.
Because, like, you know, just on a gravity point of view, right? There's got to be some vacuum
yeah.
or, you know, vacuum. Like...
We discussed this a while ago when we were talking about... the other spy having a Kenzo having a space piss,
yeah,
or even Amos going in the suit as he's mucking around with the protomolecule.
Yeah.
We've seen several pisses.
We have seen several pisses,
and we've seen several meals, coffee, tea. We know they have tea now. It just seems to be the one thing missing from a lot of shows is just how laundry gets done. I don't know.
Missing is not the right word, but I understand.
Yeah, Chris, we're looking forward to your show where everybody just does domestic chores for 45 minutes an episode.
The Sims, but in space.
I'd give it a go. It's The Sims, but we do get Holden smashes up the coffee machine and then Prax walks in comically and...
Yeah, and says, maybe you should try tea. Right, well, here's me going to be nerdy and pedantic now and say point about that. That is the thing people say, you should try tea instead of coffee, but it's the same amount of caffeine anyway.
No.
Well, it depends on the tea or the coffee.
No. Wait. Tea leaves have more caffeine in than coffee beans, but in the drink, tea has far less caffeine than a cup of tea has far less caffeine than a cup of coffee.
I mean, I started drinking.
But if we're British, but let's pretend we're American for a moment. And basically, any plant matter sort of diffused in water is tea. Mm-hmm. Isn't coffee just a form of tea? Coffee is just coffee tea.
I mean, if you really want to stretch it, is Ribena a tea? Because it tastes an awful lot like a lot of the
no, because you don't take the fruit and put it in hot water. I think that's a distinction at that
processed.
Point. Okay, yeah. But with a coffee,
if you took black currants or like dried black currants and put hot water on them, I'd say that was a black currant tea.
Yeah, so a cordial's just processing the black currants.
Yeah.
Or is it a soup?
Hot chocolate is just another form of tea.
Is coffee a soup? A bean soup?
Tea's a vegetable soup.
A broth. Yeah, it's more of a broth, I guess, than a soup, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not a stew.
Bouillabaisse.
Stew would be awful.
No, it's...
sometimes tea stew when the tea bag bursts.
Mm. Also, you can get coffee bags.
I like coffee. I used to.
Don't they call them Sex and City girls?
Oh, that's
I had to pick a show off the top of my head there. It was like it was
first one. Good one. Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Okay, we have jumped around quite a lot, actually, haven't we? Because we were on the yacht, and then we jumped to the Ross.
For reasons, yeah.
So I really enjoyed the look of the Razorback. I thought that was just a cool-looking ship. It looked like a racing ship.
I think we've seen it briefly before.
I don't think we have.
Are you sure? The shape looked familiar. I'm sure I've seen it somewhere before.
You've seen the show before.
Yeah, but I meant earlier in the series. I meant like series one or something. Wasn't Julie watching like a video of her in it or something No, just briefly. Yeah, it wasn't like a big thing, but just a brief thing. You know?
Yeah, because it's her like shaking champagne or something, isn't there?
There's something going on.
Like, and I love how it uses like little bursts of rocket to like angle it.
That's how everything works.
They'll do that, yeah.
Sorry?
That's how everything works. RCS.
Yeah. But it just looked cool.
Yeah, it does.
Because at first it looks like they're going backwards when they're not firing the engines, but what they're actually doing is peeling away at an angle.
Yeah, so
it's
yeah.
It's quite a slightly confusing CG shot.
Because and I've got a picture of the Razorback for, I don't know, just
for reasons.
It's kind of cool for reasons.
Yeah, right. Do you want to duck out the way for a minute, and I'll get the whole picture up.
Oh, it caught me off.
Cool, yeah, cool. The there you go.
There we go.
Well, we know that, like, it is a racing ship, and Julie Mao raced in it, and yeah, that video we see, like, so I did wonder, because it is very aerodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder whether that's just for
effect, I think, isn't it?
I don't know whether it's just to look cool, or whether it's do their races go in and out of atmospheres and stuff.
Maybe, that cool? That might happen. Yeah, and they might skip on the atmospheres or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't look. It looks more aerodynamic than most ships.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
In space,
really,
it doesn't need to be at all. You know, it could be any shape.
It could be a cube.
It could be. is there any benefit from a point of like from a visual point of view? No, because you're not looking through cockpits. You're looking through screens, aren't you?
Yeah, it might be in terms of maneuvering it. It might be handy for it to be long and thin. I don't know.
Yeah, it probably has to be engineered for racing purposes.
Yeah, for turning fast and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, is weight an issue with racing ships?
Yeah, same as it would be with any racing vehicle, yeah.
So it might just be that it's just neater to have stuff in a line.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
For minimum space.
I mean, it's mostly engine, isn't it? it's like a little pod at the front, like a huge engine taking like half the vehicle, you know.
So you've got the engine here, the big old engine here.
Yeah,
so
and, the problem, and the middle and like, the middle of it must be a reactor. And
yeah, it is really just an engine with a driver strapped to it, isn't it? Really.
Mm. And it might just be easier to maneuver. Just to maneuver to get through. Coronas or whatever it is, you know, to I don't know. Yeah, I mean, and also maybe it's just to read between the lines a little bit, it's probably a little bit signifying that it is a racing because they made it
looks like a dark.
It very much reminds me of the ships in Wipeout.
Yes,
it's got that kind of feel.
Yeah,
so every time somebody says Wipeout, I think about the song.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the game show.
Yeah, I was thinking the game show.
Didn't know there was a game show called Wipeout.
Yeah. The song's good, though.
And I've only heard of the game. I've no idea what the game is. Guessing from your description, it's a racing game of some sort of a spaceship.
Well, you can play it yourself. There's a real...
I don't really need to.
Oh, yeah. you forgot. Yeah, you do feel quite strongly about racing games. But
Well, I'm going to be... I've been roped into playing one with you guys.
Yeah. Hey. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun.
That's okay.
That's one way to put it.
Well, it's not always races. Sometimes it's destruction derby. Sometimes you're just going to smash into them.
Sometimes it's 10-pin bowling in a car.
Yeah.
Or curling in a car. You make your ancestors proud.
Hmm.
It does have curling in a car, by the way. That's not a joke.
No, I believe you. I don't think you're making fun. Taking you at face value. Anyway, so the shape is irrelevant in many ways, but also, it makes no odds what shape your ship is in space now, because there's no air resistance.
I mean, this is rich people land, so it's. There's but probably
also,
a lot of...
yeah, as Drew points out, maybe they do have. Maybe they use atmospheric things for the races and because it was all slingshot and then everything was the big thing in the other times we've seen racing ships.
If you had a super powerful, like if you had a ship like the Razorback, but the engine was like just ridiculously super powerful.
I think it is ridiculously super powerful. That's the point.
What would happen if you drove through a gas planet like Saturn or something?
You would die. Well,
it still gets more dense. It's not like literally a ball of gas, as in
it's not a cloud.
Like it gets dense.
It still gets more and more dense and more and more high temperature. I mean, a gas giant is a sun that hasn't caught on fire.
Caught on fire.
But the middle, I think they think
helium reaction point.
Helium and hydrogen, if you can get them dense enough by like more pressure, lower temperature, all that, they're essentially metals, I think, or they become metal. Yeah,
metallic.
Yeah.
So are you going to hit into a surface, or is it gradual?
Yeah.
It's gradual, but
gradual, but at some point you would hit a surface if you survived that long.
Yeah, I mean, there is the theory about them having a rocky core. Small rocky. I'm trying to remember planetary science stuff, and it's hurting my head that I can't remember the exact words. It's not is it aggregation? I'm thinking no. There is a better. There's another word. Maybe it is aggregation.
That sounds.
But
right.
if it's gases that get progressively more dense, the more to the core you get. Does it mean if you fire a rocket, for example? All the way through, and it can survive the temperatures and all that kind of stuff, right? Will it eventually slow down because it meets gradual increased resistance?
Yes, I mean it's hitting something solid. Well, it's hitting matter, no matter whether it's a gas giant or not. It's still hitting matter.
Yeah,
it's not empty space. It's not, and it's not a soft thing like a cloud. It's not like a cloud we see in the sky where it's soft all the way through. It is. I mean, these things are huge, you know, and massively gravitational radiation and density of as they go on, you know.
I guess I'm kind of what I'm saying is there a surface?
No.
No, it's not like...
At some point there would be a solid...
No, not like that, no.
No. So it could be the case that you just... Presumably, just drive it in, and it just goes. It slows down to a stop, and then that's
no, it would get crushed before that, probably.
I think that's what you'd have to make it get that far in, you know. Yeah, but we're talking about made of unobtainium that would be
your ship is a single proton.
Yeah. So, I mean, presumably, it bounces back. The protons bounce back because we can see the planet. Like, it's not a black hole. So it's not gobbling up all the protons.
That's photons.
Photons.
Yeah. One letter.
I got my photons and my protons mixed up. which is the one that runs games on Steam?
Right. Rock and Dice Core is the suspected thing, but when we're talking about like really far in, you get metallic hydrogen before that, and a lot of it. You know.
That's cool. Hang on,
I'll show the people at home. I don't know if I can show you. Hang on, I'll see if I can show the people on the picture.
But, I mean,
There we go.
This is slightly stating the obvious, but there's nothing that's inherently a gas, a liquid, or a solid. Like, helium and hydrogen aren't inherently gases. They're just gases at Earth temperatures. You know, there's a temperature at which a temperature and pressure at which they are solids. And
According to this diagram, which you peeps will see later... gaseous hydrogen, liquid hydrogen, helium neon rain, metallic hydrogen, and then a rock and dice core. But the core is like, you know, not like, again, it's not like a terrestrial planet.
So if you were to slingshot around, if you do a figure of eight round...
I mean, again, if you're inventing... you're asking scientific questions, but then you're inventing conditions like... But in some ways, it's not making sense.
That's like on a flat plane, a perfect sphere, all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, to some extent, but well, okay. In that case, your magic ship will hit the rock and dice core.
No, this was a slingshot question.
As a physical surface. No, I'm answering the previous one.
Yeah.
There you go. So you'll magically somehow get all the way through all that and hit the... rock and dice core, after somehow passing through metallic hydrogen.
Well, yeah. So with Jupiter and Saturn, if you were doing a figure of eight as a racing circuit, right? And so you go around Saturn, and then you go around Jupiter, and you go around Saturn.
You know that these are three-dimensional things, and there's like orbits and stuff. It's not a...
Yeah.
You know these things where you see all the planets in a straight line? That's just for illustration.
No, yes, but you take two.
You've got two points. You could sort of do that as long as there's nothing in between, like the sun or something. Yeah.
Well, that's an obstacle in a racetrack scenario, right?
Well, just to put it in perspective a little bit, bring it back to some sort of semblance of actual science. The reason that the Voyager probes were able to work so effectively was because of like a once in 150 years or so alignment of the planets.
Mm.
So, possibly, I'm trying to think when it's set now. I've forgotten when the Expanse is set. I'll have to work it out.
Oh, it was like a couple of hundred years in the future, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to have to work out when the...
But if you're going to go, okay, we're going to go, all right, we're going to go to Saturn and back, right? You could cut into the atmosphere to take a shortcut in terms of trajectory, or you could go around it the long way, right?
With your magic ship, yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Not on a real spaceship, no.
You'd slow down a bit when you hit the atmosphere, so you'd have to weigh up whether the speed boost you get is worth the slowing down of the atmosphere.
There's no scenario where a slingshot, unless you've got your magic spaceship with your magic metals or whatever it's made of, or ceramic. But there's no scenario with a real physical spacecraft that hitting the atmosphere would be better than just using the orbital slingshot.
All right. So, because this goes back to the Razorback being like racing in environments or racing in atmospheres, right?
No, we never said that though. That it was a conjecture for the shape. We were answering one of your other questions.
Right. Okay.
There's nothing in the show that says it does that. We were making suggestions as to why it might be that shape.
Right, okay.
I want to talk. I think Chris would find it really... You know black holes when photons... Because it's quite hard to fall into a black hole, right? Because you have to be pointing like in the perfect direction. Otherwise, you'll just accelerate past it, essentially, or get into an orbit with it. And it seems like black holes, or some black holes, have a lot of photons orbiting them extremely fast. So fast that they can't actually get into the black hole. So black hole, that's what, you know, that picture of the black hole they got? That's what the big glowy thing is, I think. I think that's what that is. Right. I've not remembered that very well, but
is it like,
it's more,
like
it's the more orbit, interesting like than what I said there.
So it's like photons that keep missing.
Yeah, and to they've got to lose energy to get lower, so they've got to slow down to get lower, and they keep getting faster and faster, so they can neither escape nor get in. So it's very energetic and hot and weird. Yeah.
So that's the Razorback segment of the podcast. We've concluded. Not magic.
Not, as far as we know, not magic.
Not magic. That is as a Hamish-approved fact, I hope.
But as Arthur C. Clarke said, any science that you don't understand is magic.
Mm-hmm.
That's word for word.
It looks like a fun one to fly.
It does, yeah. Well, painful.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really been on any more than, been on a roller coaster, but that's... How many G's is a roller coaster? Like 1.1
None.
Or something?
There's no G's in roller coaster.
Oh my word. Oh.
Like,
there's a few L's. And there's an R. No, two R's. Three R's. Three R's. Yeah.
Roller coaster. I don't know, actually. Yeah. I used to know what was like.
Bizarre that nobody knew what the fuck I was talking about.
Did you get the joke? There's an email at the top of the screen.
Yeah. Tell us whether you got the joke.
Dear points of view.
Yeah.
Also the spinny chairs. Presumably that's for inertia and stuff, right?
So they can be always feeling acceleration in one direction, I guess, rather than it keeping changing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's going to.
And they can rotate inside the thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. So presumably that's so that you can go.
I suspect it's some sort of gyroscopic thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I might guess.
Which only matters when there's, because if they're trying, yeah, if they're trying to fly the ship and pull maneuvers and stuff, it's to stop them from being pulled with the ship as such.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
it's
you can survive.
It's a dampening system, I would suspect.
Yeah, so that you can corner at high.
That's not exactly what it is, but that was the closest I was going to get involved.
Yeah.
Most of them are going to get involved.
Just thinking about it makes me feel nauseous.
Yeah. Looks like fun. I wonder what the... But like, Bobby's never flown anything like that before, I'm guessing.
I mean, she'd have training in flying things, for sure. Like, she would know how to fly ships, but not... Yeah, nothing like that. Yeah, I wouldn't think.
I wonder how confident you could be going from just a simulator straight into an actual ship.
I mean, she's probably flown, like, if she's a Marine, so she's probably flown, like, Marines, you know, Marines exist on spaceships.
And she's a sergeant, so she takes...
Yeah.
A gunnery sergeant. Which is a higher rank again.
But I'm guessing anyone that's in any kind of space military, anyone that's not a rank, like, private or something, is probably going to know how to pilot, right? Because piloting's everything.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No, if you're just...
I don't think rank has anything to do with your training in specific things like that.
Imagine being in the Navy. Like, in the Navy, not many people... I don't know, but I should assume in the Navy, not many people learn how to pilot a frigate. That's a very specialist...
But most people in the army, I think, know how to drive. And in space, spaceships are also like cars as well as ships.
It depends whether they are like cars or whether they are like the Navy, yeah.
Well, like skiffs, I'm assuming. But then again, I'm assuming a lot of people can get into like skiffs and things, right?
But it's probably the same. Like, most Martians have probably never been in space, never will be in space, you know.
Hmm.
Like belters, yeah, I would imagine every belter probably knows how to fly a ship, or every, you know, that kind of belter.
Yeah, so...
But Miller wouldn't have known how to fly a ship.
No, but he's a city belter.
He's a city belter, yeah.
I don't know, yeah, it's probably a relatively common skill then, I guess. I don't, but the one that Bobby, the Razorback, looked like it was quite a bit different to... It looked more like an aircraft than a boat, right? That didn't look like a normal ship, the Razorback. That looked like
The controls look just the same as any other one, though.
Yeah, I imagine the controls are standard. I do need a piss. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're leaving me with Chris then.
So, yeah.
Any other bizarre things you want to?
Do you like the joystick on the arm?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily feel like the most precise of instruments, but they do use them on aircraft, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, the Airbus jumbo jets use a joystick rather than a yoke.
They? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's the thing. I guess I was expecting yoke, weren't I? Yeah, no yoke about that.
You'll end up with egg on your face for that sort of comment.
Oh, that's nasty. What else? So further on the ship. Oh yeah, because like, do you reckon? I wonder if Theo would have known how to do the.
He says he is. Yeah, he's trained. He's a trained pilot.
Yeah. So I don't know about Avicerella though. Spy would definitely know.
Yeah, he does. But the point is that all she has to do is, like, with a bit of careful judgment, point it in one direction and fire the engines, really, with this. It's a case of escaping the missiles is all they really need to do up front. You know, it's like flying a plane, like a jumbo jet or whatever. Apart from the takeoff and the landing, there isn't a lot else going on. You know, it's just straight and level flight, and it's, that's why you have an autopilot. You know, you just want to keep it
pointing in the right direction.
Pointing in the right direction, occasional maneuvers. Yeah.
Do they have to have, do you reckon they have to have space debris sensors?
Well, she had, if you saw the, when the thing exploded, I mean, they will have sensors for things, yeah. Mm. I mean, although I don't know how much sensor equipment is going to be in a racing ship, though, I suppose. But the point is that she sees on the display, like an exploding, you know, an expanding debris field coming from the explosion. And that's when she says, you know, brace for impact.
Yeah.
Sorry, he didn't manage to annoy me, but we did manage to make two really bad jokes between us.
So what else have we got on the ship? Also Avasarela, of course, she made Theo take the memory chip, the memory card.
Oh yeah, yeah, the memory cord from the ship, yeah. Because of the broadcast core or whatever logs she wanted, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I think that's a dead smart move on her part. Although for some reason, right, Theo was like, "Oh, that will take hours to do," and it's like Avasarela managed to convince him that it didn't, and it seemed to have took a lot less.
You muted, Drew.
That's how it works in Star Trek as well.
Okay, you just convince someone to be...
Yeah, the engineer is like, I need 10 hours.
You say, get good, and they do.
I need 10 hours to do this, and then the captain's like, I need it in 5, and the engineer's like, okay.
Why have you got a games controller?
I don't.
You playing a game while we're doing this?
No.
Jeez, oh. He's playing flat out.
I'm bouncing a ball around in Rocket League on my own.
Yeah. Are we boring you?
It's my keep my hands busy game.
God, what will happen if you don't? No, don't even answer that. Carry on.
It's your own fault for making me point the camera down.
Okay. We do actually, this is sort of tangentially linked to the yacht, is Erin Wright's conversation with Mann.
Mann, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's Erin Wright's able to get away with that kind of bullshit because that's Erin Wright without Avasarela, you know, sort of holding him back or contradicting him or whatever. Yeah. He's been an absolute wanker.
Yeah, I mean, basically starting a proper war, full-on war.
Yeah, and I think you're right when he says he's like, he is like the guy that just sort of agrees with the person that spoke to him last.
I think somebody in the show literally says that. Oh, maybe that happens in The Office as well. I think because Mann is very much Michael Scott,
but with less.
Oh, when you say The Office, you mean the American Office,
the good one. Yeah,
the American one.
So Erin Wright is
Wright's also, off his leash, basically.
Off his leash. Yeah, but like he just says, like, this is your legacy. And he goes, maybe I should.
Yeah, he's
do
very
all.
Manipulative. Yeah, yeah.
It's Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell.
Kind of, but that's if Tony Blair was a moron.
No, he was apparently.
Was he?
Yeah, apparently. Who was it? I can't remember. Somebody being interviewed, and they talked about meeting Tony Blair. And it was something about, they said, like, he's going to, about going to Brazil and like having learned Portuguese. And Tony Blair says something, well, if you're going to Brazil, you're going to need to learn Brazilian or something like that. It's just like an absolute dumbass. And it was really Alistair Campbell just running the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, we know that anyway.
I believe.
I mean, he's a performer, Blair. You know, he can read the lines and everything.
And he does come across like a dumbass.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as the smartest man.
Okay. I've always assumed that he was smart. I guess I've never really scratched beneath the surface.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think given a speech, he could deliver the speech as if it were his own thoughts. But when you see him being interviewed and stuff, yeah, when you actually think about it, it's like, oh god, yeah, he is actually quite stupid.
Yeah, but then again, like every world leader's had that moment. Right, like every world leader's asked a stupid, like, you know,
Oh no, I mean constantly with Blair, but I know, yeah, for sure, yeah. Mm. And I think man is just vapid, right? Just without personality.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I'm guessing they cast him deliberately to be a like most generic politician.
Yeah.
He's very generic white man.
Yeah,
you know, of a certain age.
White man of a certain age. I mean, but then again, and I know I always come back to this because, you know, outfits sort of interest me in terms of storytelling, but he's still wearing that ridiculous just white, you know, the penguin outfit. And it's like, look, if you're going to go with the minimalist shirt, don't go white, any other color but white.
I will say, we got just regarding his personality in that is not spoilers, just broad. In future episodes and seasons, you're going to get a dynamic where that is inspected, where character of man is inspected, and it's kind of great. It is kind of great.
All right, I'm looking forward to President Man's character being investigated.
President Man, he literally is. He's President Man.
I will really say, so there's one thing about the Aaron Wright stuff that confuses me is, well, maybe not. Given how unaware the General Secretary seems to be in other things, surely he would have known about the legal proceedings that were going to happen against Aaron Wright. And what happened to that? You know, he was all set to get hauled in front of some big inquiry.
Well, I assume my read on that is what Aaron Wright pulled when they were on the yacht.
Mm.
Somehow involved getting out of that in a way that we didn't see.
Yeah, fair enough.
My take is, I agree, it's a bit of a, we don't really get why, but sorry, Chris.
Well, he's just getting Avicerella to take the fall. I mean, he does, in fact, at the beginning of the episode, treat the President Avicerella's actually the bad guy. I didn't come forward with it sooner, not because I didn't think about it until recently, but because I loved her like a mother. That's the real reason.
And honestly, I was scared of her.
Yeah. But now she's away.
Yeah. No, that's probably it, actually. Yeah. So it would be her under the spotlight now instead of him.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I mean, that's as far as I'm concerned.
It wasn't a huge thing. It was just one of those little...
Yeah.
You know, it seemed a little bit of a shift. But as you say, Chris, what you say makes sense, Chris. What, you know, the part of the whole setup of him getting... you know, arranging the things that he did in the last episode,
How do you two feel when Holden makes explicit references to Don Quixote? Like in this episode, he said he killed at Windows. I think it's going slightly too far for me.
Yeah. Although you could maybe argue that he's realizing something about the book. Because remember, his mother said...
She never had
the heart to tell him it wasn't a tragedy rather than a heroic story.
Yeah.
And maybe that's him realizing it and speaking it out, you know, thinking it through and saying it out loud and everything.
Yeah,
I like that.
I'd say that's a possibility anyway.
Also, I guess, you know, if you loved that book as a child, you would see the world in its terms and use those terms maybe.
Oh, definitely.
I do feel a little bit talked down to by the writers when they're going, he's quixotic, you know.
Yeah, no, I think Hamish sort of, rationally.
That's okay. If they went any further with it, I think it would annoy me, but I think they're just on the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not familiar with Don Quixote, so...
You should read it.
Well, tilting at windmill, tilting was something older. Because tilting is...
Lancing.
Jousting.
Okay, because I was thinking about it in the poker term.
No. So in Don Quixote thinks he's a great knight, and he thinks windmills are giants. And he goes up on his with his lance and charges at the windmills, thinking he's killing giants, basically.
Yeah,
but the symbolism is, well, the way it's used, the way Holden was using it, it's like taking on enemies that you can't defeat. Basically.
Yeah, that's what the phrase is used that way anyway nowadays. Since Don Quixote was published, it's been used as that, you know, like imaginary enemies that you can't, you know, worrying about imaginary enemies that you can't defeat.
Yeah. When was Don Quixote published or made? Or
Cervantes, wasn't it? So it's like 16...
A long, long time ago.
Yeah. Public domain then, is it?
Cervantes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can get it for... You can get it easily enough.
1605.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Part one.
Miguel de Cervantes.
Cervantes.
Well, it was near the end of his life that he wrote it. Nearish.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Actually, it didn't look like he lived very... Oh, no, 68 he was. I can never count properly over boundaries.
All right, should we go to the Rosinante, or now, as it's known, as...
Pinus...
As...
Contour.
That was very sweet. That bit where Praxis renamed the ship and he describes the tree.
Mm.
It was very sweet. I like that bit.
It's real tree as well.
Mm. Well, it's better than naming it after Amos's favourite sex worker, right? I was thinking whether or not Naomi picked Prax, not necessarily super consciously, but with the idea that he, because he's the newest member, the name wouldn't have like baggage that would be picked up on it.
That's like, one possibility, but I think the other possibility is everybody else is pissed off with her.
Yeah.
She's not wanting to deal with them, you know.
And also, you don't want Alex naming your ship.
What did he say? Oh yeah, he called it
Screaming Firehawk.
That was it. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. So yeah. So if it was Amos, it'd be Two Legs McGee.
No, he no. His favorite sex worker was Rosinante.
Yeah. Which also, I don't know if you remember, that's Don Quixote's horse as well.
Yeah.
Holden said Rosinante, but then Amos agreed, right?
So, he says a prostitute with that name or something. He says,
yeah.
She was nice.
So it's. Everyone does seem a bit pissed off with Naomi. I get why, but I also get why she did it, and I get
no,
I,
but
yeah, but
given,
they had all given... agreed, and everything seemed to be settled and agreed. Mm. That I think that's what jars them, and then she just left it for ages without telling them anything else
given the number of times they go off and do stupid shit just off the cuff, especially Holden.
There is that.
Like, when he's
well,
just like,
yeah.
fuck it, I'm just taking the ship to do this without telling anybody, or without checking with it, or checking it's okay. Yeah, no, fuck that.
Yeah. But that had died down a lot, though.
I mean, he's literally just done it with the monster chasing after the monster, damaging the ship, endangering everybody's lives.
You've got a point there. Yeah. I'll shut the fuck up. You're right.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, like I, as the show goes on, I dislike the fact that you likened me to Holden more and more as it goes on.
Not this Holden.
No.
Good. This Holden's more like me.
Nah, I don't even think. No,
like,
I think
like good-hearted but reckless.
Yeah, but Holden is also inconsiderate, and you're not inconsiderate. You'd be more like Amos, I think, really, more than anything else.
I'm happy with Amos. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like that you've likened me to Prax. I like Prax.
I mean, you're Prax now. Now Prax is on the scene, and I can say that you are Prax.
Yeah, I get that as well. Yeah,
oh, that's nice because he's one of my favourites, and I hope he stays around for a bit longer.
He's
him
a
and
great
his
character.
Slightly too big jumpsuit.
Uh oh. I'm not going to like the next episode.
Yeah.
Oh dear. No, you.
You know how some people. Cut the top off their boiled eggs and others crush it with a spoon, you know. It's a thing for the medics to you know, the head to fly, come off, you know. Now we're just fucking with you.
Yeah, yeah. No, to be honest, if he died, I know you would have poker faced me on it.
Yeah.
I think Prax, I don't know, like at this point,
Although we did a good job on Miller, I think. Like you,
he's still alive.
Literally, the episode before he dies, you were like, "Yeah, no, he's got plot armor."
I mean, I definitely knew he had plot armor as in terms of like he's not just going to accidentally hold a bomb, or he's not going to drop a bomb. Like he's going to go out in a meaningful way.
Well, it was quite meaningful. I thought
it was very meaningful. Yeah.
Well, I don't. I mean, it depends.
Like, he literally saved the. And that again, we didn't really touch on this, but that's so fucking poetic for Miller. Like a man who always he wanted to be from Earth. Like, what does rain taste like? All that stuff. Like he wanted to be an Earther. Mm-hmm. Never went to Earth. Saved the planet Earth from fucking destruction. That's so fucking cool.
I in my mind, the protomolecule is Miller at this stage, you know, or is truly, you know, like it's
valid, yeah.
Right. Actually, while we're talking protomolecule, then can I show that I was correct about something? I'm pointing I was correct about something in the last episode. Drew, do you know what I'm going to talk about? Or?
No,
all right.
No.
Remember, I said that when everything happens with the protomolecule, it all happens at the same time. And it does, and that is what Holden finds out, and how they find a track to a third, fourth, presumably because of the Fred's got on his one as well on
is
Io.
It Io,
Io, yeah,
Io Interactive.
Well, 10, as I like to call
10,
it,
Planet 10, or low.
There's low. A moon over there.
Yeah, so this is as this is Strickland's base, is it?
Well, I don't know if it's on Io or around Io or whatever, but yeah, that's we get the you know that's where they're headed. That seems to be the next clue.
Okay, so hang on a minute. Now I don't know if I should know this or whether or not you're going to poker face me, but when we saw the final clip, the final scene of the last episode of the last series, last episode, so season 2, episode 13, we saw Strickland put May into cryogenic storage, presumably cryogenic storage. And I was that on Io?
I'm poker facing that one.
Poker facing. How
about you, Hamish?
Okay. All right, that's understandable, but because I think when it does a pan over a bunch of moons and stuff around Saturn, and I'm thinking if I was a super knowledgeable chap, I might be able to recognize Io from that scene.
Is Io the really ugly, the one that looks like a diseased wound or something?
I suppose you could say that. It's extremely volcanic.
Yeah,
it's really close to Jupiter. It's extremely volcanic. It's really bathed in radiation.
It's close to Jupiter, despite being a Saturn moon, or is it?
It looks like a cross between a wound.
Jupiter moon.
Ganymede, Jupiter moon.
It looks like a cross between a wound and like rotten cheese.
Yeah, I'd go with that. Yeah. Fair enough.
Okay, so we don't know if Strickland is currently on Io, but it seems as much, doesn't it? Because Ganymede seems to
it might not be on Io. It might be
around Io, on a
station or a ship near Io or something, Because it is an extremely dangerous place to be. It's extremely radiation. It's a bit of a huge radiation hazard, Io.
But that would protect it if you managed to shield yourself. If you managed to find a way to shield yourself from it. That might be... Oh! So, okay, maybe Strickland is on a secret part of Ganymede. I'm just trying to think, is there any reason why we would even think that he's not on Ganymede anymore? We haven't seen him leave it particularly, have we? We haven't found him on Ganymede, but we haven't seen him leave it. But protomolecule, of course, thrives on radiation. So if they dropped off a couple of... blue men onto Io, they could grow and evolve in what would be a close approximation to them to a natural environment. It'd be a natural home for proto people, the protonites.
I'm trying to find something that's like exactly
the protomoleculans. Do you think the proto-moleculans have retired the concept of gender? Because, you know, we were talking about their bits and pieces in the last episode. You know, like, you didn't see there was no visible cock, but you were saying, well, it could be you know, it could be a female,
could be a girl actually. One, yeah.
But it could just be that they've decided that actually gender is just not something that the proto-moleculans really need. You know, there's no necessity for gender.
Yeah, that's not gender though, is it? That's
no, it's bits and bobs.
Sex or yeah, what genitals you've got? Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, because they could have two sets of genitals, but also be indistinguishable from gender, like the Omar in Deus Ex Invisible War.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I imagine they probably got space genitals, or like genitals. You know, like just like, I don't know, some sort of catheter, or you know, like they probably just have a little bottle that they empty when they need to take a piss and then just plug it back in or something.
You're really obsessed with this stuff.
Okay, well, mine's worse. mine's more of a ridiculous tangent because IO surface always reminds me of the way the skin is painted in this particular crucifixion painting. You probably want to get that enlarged and have a look at his skin.
Right. You put a picture of IO up. I'll stick the picture of IO up, and people can see that. Yeah, yeah.
Do you want me to put a picture? Because
no, I'm doing it here. I'm going to do it on for the benefit of the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting them up on the screen, and it's where am I looking?
So the skin of the Christ, it's all over. It's pierced with thorns. Like it traditionally has the crown of thorns, but on this one, he's pierced everywhere with thorns, and his skin looks like distended and diseased and painful. Yeah,
I see what you're saying.
See it on his legs, around the knees, and that, and it's got a similar painful feel to the surface of Io to me.
Okay, well, there we go.
Yeah. That's the
art education coming out again.
Eisenheim altarpiece. It's an interesting early Renaissance, Northern Renaissance painting.
You've posted up a fair number of pictures of Jesus lately.
I mean, he was a big popular influencer in early art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wonder if he had his own channel on one of the big socials, you know.
Jesus on TikTok. hang on, where did we leave off? Are we?
Oh God, I've lost track because of bottles of piss being disposed of by proto molecule people.
Oh, yeah. Proto molecule genitals is where we were.
Proto genitals. I mean,
we don't know what they're making on Venus. Maybe it's the penis of Venus.
This is just a giant dick. That's just going to float up.
Either works. Balls, you know? The penis of Venus or the Venus vagina. They both have a nice kind of flow to them.
Mm-hmm.
Venus, I mean, vagina would make more sense symbolically given Venus, blah blah blah. But
and also, it's got crater. You know, it's the crater, and
yeah, but no, yeah, but there's also a thing sticking out of the crater because of the impact. Craters aren't like a bowl, you know.
A penis on Mars and a vagina on Venus, and then the planets will fuck.
Like the one on Mimas, the moon of Saturn, I think it is. Mimas is, you know, that's the one that looks a bit like the Death Star.
You know, with the single crater. Or the very prominent big crater.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the moon of Saturn.
That's a moon?
That is a moon. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm going to put it up on the screen for everybody's benefit. Oh my goodness, that's a big one.
Thank you.
Mm.
I get that a lot.
And for anybody that is... hang on, copy image. I'll give you guys a look at it as well. There you go. But
and that's in our.
If you look at in yeah, but it's also been shown on the stream.
It's got a little nipple.
It's yeah, because it's, you know, if you smash something, I mean, if you look at the other craters, like particularly the slightly big one on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see that craters that aren't smoothed out over time, like things that don't, you know, because obviously in these without, like the moon without an atmosphere.
Mm. See, because when we were talking about the crater on Venus with that was created by Eros, you mentioned that the one of the growing towers was like, you know, the
technical term is the bloop.
Oh, the bloop. Okay, I thought it was like the dead.
You throw a pebble in the water and you go bloop, and then that little thing.
Yeah. Like it's a bit like the dead cat bounce almost or whatever. Like it's the.
If you look as well, if you see it, it's the whole thing. The whole structure isn't protomolecule. It's the crater with protomolecule things happening in this within the structure of the crater. So that's why you've got the Drew points out, the technical term is the bloop.
But there were two bloops, didn't they? They mentioned that there were two things coming out.
There was stuff coming up the edge as well. Yeah, we saw that. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there was one for the UN ship and another for the Martian ship. And they were going.
Tentacles reaching out. I think they were there already.
I remember you mentioning that.
I think they were already. There's more than two. There was.
There'd be more than two. Yeah, and actually, now that everything seems to be descending on Venus, like I'm going to be really interesting to see, because like the protomolecule is probably going to defend itself. Like the protomolecule can just like dismantle a ship quicker, you know, like instantly, right?
I cannot fucking wait till we get to the next bits with the proton molecule, because
if
you're talking about the proton molecule stuff, I'll let you go as magical as you bloody well want. That's fine, you know, they seem to defy physics. They don't actually, but it seems to defy physics, but it doesn't actually.
Don't you fuck with the surface of Saturn.
No, we've got enough action. You know, you're asking a scientific question, but you're changing the laws of physics to suit.
So, Hamish, I have a question.
Oh, this is going to wind up.
If I had a spaceship made out of time itself,
yeah.
And I was trying to orbit love,
yep.
How big would I need to be?
Pi squared.
That's
and how many bottles of piss would you need?
37.
37.
Good answer.
But some of those you would actually take back in.
Gotcha. And could you, if you did them in glass, would you be eligible for the?
Oh, you get a refund.
Deposit scheme. Even though it's piss, because like
doesn't matter. You know. Doesn't matter. Especially not the ones that's gone back in, because that's like actually removed completely.
Okay.
So those ones you get an extra penny per bowl.
Oh, if you keep the piss in it.
Did you, as a child, used to, when you were short of money because you wanted to buy a box of matches to set fire to something, did you go out collecting bottles and like?
I will point out that one of those things.
Is that just me?
There was a bit of that, and then there was a sort of a tangent that was specifically you. Yeah. But yeah, if you wanted a Mars bar, you'd go and find a couple of empty bottles. Yeah.
I had friends that liked setting fire to things. It was
It was the number one hot. Most of my friends were on the same wavelength. So yeah.
I wouldn't say pyromaniac times, but I have a little fascination with like flame and stuff as well as a kid at some point.
It feels natural, doesn't it?
Fire is fascinating. Fire is just fascinating.
It's a Promethean thing, isn't it? Fire from the
I've got a scar on my hand there, like a kind of an oval scar from, we went into the woods when we were about 6, 7, hung bin liners up in the trees. Set fire to them, so there was dripping molten plastic coming down, like zoop, 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 like making that noise. And we were trying to bike between the drips. One landed on my hand. And
it sounds like the kind of crazy things I did as a kid, but not that specific one. Fire, I was always a bit more wary of fire, I would say.
Maybe I was quite wary of compressed canisters. That was the thing.
There was
all them plus fire was a ton of fun.
Mm. Oh, scary,
very dangerous. Like,
good bang. Yeah.
Yeah, pop a Lynx canister on the campfire and step back a little bit. But the thing is, it took a little bit longer than you thought.
It's not going to do it. It's not going to do it.
And then, oh my God, there were some fucking close calls. I don't know. I think have stayed with me over the years, you know?
These days, in fact, probably, I don't know when I got... You know, you were talking about being afraid of heights the other day, you know, but not in video games. You enjoyed it.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember when I was dodging school sometime, we were underneath a railway bridge in Stirling.
Mm-hmm.
While there was trains going over and climbing. You know that bit in Half-Life 2 where you go under the bridge? It was very much like that. water. But you know, when you're
the spiky things that you have to sort of climb around.
There was all sorts. Looking back, and you think, what the fuck were you doing, you maniac?
Oh my god! Yeah.
Well, I do wonder, given my recklessness.
Climbed trees a lot as well when I was a kid.
Given my recklessness and the number of times I should have died, I do wonder whether my agoraphobia and panic disorder is like a defense mechanism to just stop.
Like your brain's gone. Fucking stop all that!
I push you so far the other way.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's very a logical thing. There's definitely things like I'm a little bit nervous of compressed like canisters. I prefer not deathly afraid of them or nothing like that. Like I've got compressed canisters around, but like I'm always cautious. I'm always keeping them in safe places and not.
Oh, now as an adult, I'm terrified of everything. But as a child, we tried putting a Calagas canister on a fire. It didn't actually blow, but we wanted a big bang. I think it's good that didn't blow.
Yeah, it probably is. If you'd been able to get that hot enough, that would have made a nice bang. Yeah.
Oh god, it reminds me of that urban legend. I don't know if this ever truly happened, but where some old geezers like last of the summer wine type chaps. Found an old unexploded World War II mine, and they were in the back room of a pub taking turns to kick it in a sort of Russian roulette, but everyone dies kind of thing.
Love it.
But they had to take that one out last of the summer winder. We used to
set shotgun shells because occasionally you'd find because they have shoots around here, and also there's a lot of farmers, so occasionally you find unused shotgun shells. We used to put them in a vise and make them go off with a hammer and nail.
Yeah, that's yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? That like it's relatively easy to make your own gun, but bullets are where the real technology is.
Oh yeah, that's yeah.
Why don't they regulate bullets and just like let people have the gun? Like it just. I mean, maybe that's a bit.
I swear, there's a Billy. What's his name? The sort of 80s edgy comedian.
Oh God! Yeah,
Bill Hicks.
Bill Hicks, yeah, I swear he said a thing. He said a thing like guns should be really cheap and ammo should be really expensive, or something like that.
Yeah. It should totally. Like, I mean, to me that makes sense because I could make a gun. I don't know about making a bullet.
Because
I mean, I know bullets aren't you know like particularly advanced science. It's like flint and gunpowder and like the casing and right mostly and
yeah let's go with yes before
it's
we
the
start
engineering
getting...
it's the end like the
engineering
it's the
engineering
is,
yes
to
make it
yeah,
precise
yeah yeah
yeah yeah, yeah
it's like a nuclear weapon isn't that difficult to make in terms of
if you've got the materials
yeah but to make it useful. You have to you know the engineering part of it is important, hence
the fear about and I'm constantly amazed that no terrorist organizations have set up a dirty bomb yet.
Yeah, it amazes me. Especially when you find out how much is missing unaccounted for. You know?
Yep, in the past.
I mean but the other one is those science capsules that people drop. You know, they'll have a convoy or something of taking some scientific materials and be like some radioactive something the size of a pencil that's radioactive and extremely fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
And it will just get dropped. And, you know, you've had incidents of people, you know, because there was one went missing. I think it was last year or earlier this year, one went missing on a desert road. And thankfully they found it before anybody else did. But, you know.
When when they were getting rid of like a whole bunch of train lines in like the 50s and 60s and 70s because like cars were the future and they were like sort of soft phasing out rail almost at that stage because you know and the around here there are a lot of like old viaducts and like tall bridges but no rail on them so you've got basically this like
just grass
this platform that goes out and then there's a sheer drop
and
they do fence them off. But like it's not that hard, especially if you're a kid and you can climb over shit. To like get onto them. And I was like, I remember me and friends just like looking over the edge.
I'm just thinking about that.
Oh my god, I'm sorry, but like and thinking, like a strong gust of wind or a trip or a fall. Oh my word.
Similar thing. I mean, I was about 18 or 19. It was one of the last times I remember this, and I was starting to get more cautious. But I lived on a coast, like literally the house I lived in at the time was across the road was a few more houses that tapered off, and then it was a playing field communal area. Mm-hmm. Then it was the water. That was it. And there was a stone jetty that went out, and the kids, when the storm was up, some of the local kids would run out onto it and run back. I mean, if they got hit and swept off, they'd be fucking dead. That'd be it.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, standing at the edge, I always feel like water is pulling you towards it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I feel like drops
in general.
Yeah, probably.
It's that thing, it's kind of that thing about, like, you know, if there was a plank between two very high buildings, like a plank on the ground, I could dance across it.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Backwards across it, but between two buildings, I'd be paralyzed.
For some, well, I mean, it's got some sort of self-preservation.
Yeah.
It's January 2023, the Western Australian radioactive capsule incident. Between the 10th and 6th, so they don't even have... that's the time. Excuse me a second, Peanut wants through the door.
Oh, yeah. Do you reckon...
So this capsule containing a 19 gigabecquerel cesium-137 ceramic source went missing from a truck. And I mean, literally, it would... That is extremely fucking dangerous.
Mm.
Thankfully, they found it. It took them nearly 3 weeks to find it, but it was on a desert road in the Great Way, in the Western Australia. Yeah. So it wasn't and they did say if anybody found it, stay at least 5 meters away from it. So this is, you know, we're not talking about if you get too close to it, you know. That'll be a bit bad, but you know, we're talking about something that would really do you a lot of damage.
Do you
think all this mad shit that we all, because like that's quite like all of our these anecdotes we say, they're relatively common things that most people of a certain age have done, right?
Mm.
Or something to that effect. Playing
apart from
fire,
the nuclear stuff,
except the nuclear stuff.
My stupid. I'll be brutal. I won't tell the whole story, but very briefly, my friends and I, about 17, 18, incredibly drunk and high. Decided we wanted to go paintballing, couldn't get the paintball guns. We went in pitch black woods. We went paintballing with shotguns.
What was the paint? What were you using as the paint?
Shotgun shells. I was genuinely... It was a pitch black forest and we were very drunk at night. I was genuinely aiming, trying to shoot my friends. Somehow we convinced ourselves that would be fun.
Wow.
None of us got shot at all. Thank fuck, but yeah.
Okay, that's a level above.
But it's that thing I was saying about Diogo. Like at that point in your life, that's coming towards the end of it, I think. But like you think you're invincible, not like on an intellectual level. You just behave as if you were indestructible. Mm.
I have to take a space dog piss trip. I'll be right back. You two can talk about. I mean, you can even talk about the Expanse if you wanted. You know, crazy.
I mentioned Diogo.
I got into cars with drunk drivers.
You need a lift home.
We didn't need to go 100 miles an hour. That's the thing.
No, I'm saying when you're looking for a lift home and you know your drunk friend's like, I'll take you home, and that's your only option, you take it.
It wasn't my only option. I just thought it was thrilling. You know, I wasn't driving. I'd like to point out, and I've never drunk drive, but like when the legal obligation is not on you.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it is and it was country roads for you, same as me, right?
This was
city.
No, dual carriageways.
Oh, okay, that's okay. That's
It was middle of the night.
Yeah,
100
yeah.
miles an hour. I mean, the thing is, we pulled up at the petrol station and stumbled out of the car. Why they should not? I don't know. I mean, I know it's not their responsibility, and it was just probably some poor minimum wage worker working a ridiculous shift who didn't give a shit. But like,
the thing is, the social acceptability of drunk driving has changed immensely over the last 20 or 30 years.
Mm.
Like in the 90s, it was like you shouldn't do that, but it was like a sort of half laughing, you shouldn't do that kind of thing. Like, but yeah,
yeah. Now it's like, yeah,
you're a murderer, like, basically, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you always were.
Yeah, it was fair. Yeah. It's fair. Yeah,
but. With all the mad shit that we did, do you think that like lent lent itself to a generation of helicopter parents, because, like, you know, all the helicopter parents were like, oh God, I don't want them to do the shit that I did when I was a kid.
Because I think that's something that happens to every generation, though.
But yeah, I think
you don't want, I think you sort of forget a lot of the shit you did as a kid when you're a parent.
I think Gen X was like really the last generation that had that freedom, though. I think after millennials onwards, I think they were far more. Well, they were kind of more supervised before, because the thing about Gen X, the distinctive thing about Gen X is that it's when mum started working.
Mm.
So, like, school, you know, summer holidays to an extent, weekends to an extent, and certainly like the periods before and after school, you'd often be unsupervised, and so it's just a bunch of kids unsupervised doing whatever the fuck they wanted.
I mean, I'm smack dab in the middle of millennial town, but we were still plenty unsupervised.
Younger
millennials. It depends on the class thing and how big or small the place where you live is, and all sorts of.
I don't know if I said this on video already, but yeah, my normal weekend or school holiday was I would get up before my parents.
Yeah, you said this
just be out of the house all day. Parents had no idea where I was, but they weren't scared or anything. That was just kids. That's what kids are supposed to be.
Yeah, I think you got a point there, Hamish, when you say like where you are probably makes a fair difference, because you know, small country town, low crime rate, generally pretty safe. You know,
up till nine, I was in a fairly big city. You know, Stoke-on-Trent.
To be fair, we were the biggest risk to ourselves. I remember when I was a kid, I just curiously took apart various electronics.
Always taking electronics apart. And I mean, you know, most of the time I got them back together. But yeah, I would take apart. I mean, my first computer, I had taken that apart. My sisters
are so traumatized by that whenever my niece gets some new electronic thing, my sister will say, "Don't let Drew take it apart." I don't even do it anymore. When if they got a new Christmas present that was electronic, I'll be taking it apart, put it back together, give it back to them, don't let Drew take it apart.
I don't even do that no more.
Yeah.
I'm reformed, I tell you. Anyway, this Expanse show, we should really check it out. I think we can do a podcast.
Yeah, we should give it a watch. See what it's like. Stop bluffing.
Do you want to talk about Tycho? Because there's some interesting stuff that happens on Tycho.
Yes, Tycho. Especially the shorts that Carrie G wears. Yes.
Oh, okay. I gotta be honest. I didn't even notice because I was looking at.
And she's quite freckly as well, Carrie G. And I've got a thing for freckles as well.
I don't like freckles, but she's the acceptable kind of freckly for me.
Honestly, I don't want to sound like a creep or nothing, but like
too late, we've done it.
I think she looks like really good in a uniform.
She does. Well, I've discussed this before as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the shorts are like that's just workout shorts, really. I was more worried about the cut. Like, dress that.
I know she's like doing setups with a big knife wound in her stomach, you know. Or a bullet wound. Like, what was that? A knife?
Gun wound. Yeah.
Maybe it's glued up. Maybe they're using like a surgical glue or something. And
it wasn't like bleeding. Medicine. It was just bloody.
Painful. Like,
yeah.
And we learn a little bit of history about her and Fred Johnson. And also, I don't know if I think we talked about this previously, but it was Fred Johnson and Kimona that
Kimona.
Sorry,
her name's drummer. Call her drummer.
Drummer. Yeah, I to me it's more like I've got to drill it into myself. Kimona, it's written down correctly. I just got to. Anyway, it was Kimona and Johnson that built up Tycho.
She gives her reason for going with Fred rather than going with Dawes, which was
quite interesting.
I get that, like you know, yeah. I think Dawes doesn't have like I know this. I don't. I know that this is like, is Fred and is this Fred's Earth aside, or is this Anderson Dawes being a little bit blasé with human life? You know, I don't like the idea of life being cheap, right? Like, you know,
I don't think it's cheap if it's to win something, you know, worthwhile. Like, well, I mean, I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how much of it is aesthetic, really, and whether Fred in the same. I mean, we've seen Fred will throw people at problems if the problem requires people thrown at it.
And it's not so much what they will or won't do. It's how much they consider the alternatives, the options, and maybe that's performative. Maybe theatre would fool me on that. Maybe Anderson Dawes, as you say, you know, he pretends to be a hard case, but is actually just a lot more strategic. And Fred Johnson is actually quite happy to throw bodies at a problem, but as long as he does it in a way that is not diplomatic, but like there is an air of dignity about it, right?
Yeah, I do think Dawes. I mean, this is my read, and I'm very sympathetic to Dawes, so that's, you know, has to be factored in. But I do think Dawes, like you say, like a union boss, he doesn't follow like the bourgeois aesthetic expectations of a smart person, but he does seem to be a smart person who plans and has a plan and has strategy and stuff. Or he could be tricking me. It's entirely possible he's tricking me, and all he really has is a mobster who's using the politics as a cover for enriching himself and his friends. Like, that's entirely possible.
Oh no, I reckon that Dawes is I think his intentions are honorable. I just think he's just maybe a little less he just thinks human life might just be a little less sacred. But then I think
he's a revolutionary, I'm not saying this is like to pigeonhole,
I think he thinks every belter is a soldier.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think Fred leans more reformist, and Dawes leans more revolutionary, I think, is the fundamental difference between them.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that is in aesthetics, but maybe that also is partly the point. Because, like, you know, the thing about politics that I sort of come to get reaffirmed time after time is that it's all about vibes. Right, like you can't really put that much of a science to it, because the thing, of course, that we noticed recently, the healthcare assassin, is that like almost everyone and everywhere I see who isn't part of an obvious media class type of thing, but like almost everyone I know is like, yeah, good,
yeah,
you know, good,
yep.
You know, even people that I would think would actually be a bit more like, oh, there's no need to be, no, good. In fact,
a lot of healthcare professionals are like, nurses and pharmacists.
I've seen people saying about, like, you know, they're fairly conservative parents, even were like, you know, good on him, like, hope they don't catch him, kind of thing.
And you know, and there were more people that were like good on him than people that with like Osama bin Laden. There were people that were like, Osama bin Laden should have gone on trial, right?
You know.
This guy getting shot in the hell, the CEO guy, good, and I'm glad he got away, and I'm glad he got away on a bike.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting symmetry there. I think people care about this dude in the way that people wanted, or the media wanted us to care about Osama bin Laden, where I put that poorly, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing.
It's really a revolutionary act.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So hang on, there was a point to it. Oh yeah, but there's a lot of people that were like sort of quizzing, clueless liberals and clueless Democrats are going, oh well, why is everyone cheering on the assassination of this healthcare CEO? But they voted for Trump, and it's like, no, you got to join. There's some dots.
You've got to join, right? Yeah,
you got to, you know, it, like Democrats need to work out, and it's like it's vibes.
I agree with Trump. It is 90%. It's 90%. He's not like them.
Yes.
I mean, underneath it all, he is. But presentationally, he's not
pretending
like
pretending to be something completely other than
exactly.
he is.
Yeah, absolutely. Because also a lot of like all the abortion ballot measures, they were voted through relatively convincingly. Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so obviously people don't, and a lot of people,
and some other. That's the thing. Some very supposedly red states vote for some very what would be considered by American standards left wing ballot measures. Yeah, minimum wage stuff, Yeah, abortion. Yeah, they'll vote that through. So policy,
The in fact, the ballot measure for legalizing cannabis in Florida, for which I think was recreational use, that got like 60% of the vote.
They needed
a supermajority for it to pass. So it didn't pass, but it's more than 50%.
The problem is without a Bernie or a Corbyn, there's nobody representing these views that is votable. That's the fucking. There's nobody representing these popular fucking views, and it's infuriating. Mm.
This is why I reckon, not to be too like political about it now, but like if the Democrats don't run someone like a Jon Stewart, they are like they might as well just be punching themselves in the face dawn till dusk, right? Like I think like
that's what they do at the moment.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Well, assuming their goal is to win, they make a well trodden, but they make a shit ton of money out of losing. So I'm not sure they even give a fuck.
Yeah,
on a structural, organizational level, of course, there's people within them that do, but they're not geared to win because it doesn't matter.
Because Jon Stewart would win an election easy. I'm just going to say it.
Who do you mean by Jon Stewart, the media dude?
Yeah, he is. He's the late night talk show. I think he.
Oh, he's a twat.
Oh no, I like him.
Yeah,
he's
big Democrat guy. You know, like he's and you know he's good looking. You know, he's articulate. He is left, like solidly.
In an American sense.
In an American sense, yeah, yeah. Mm. You know?
He's a mixed bag, I think, politically.
I don't think, politically, but that, like, you're not going to get someone as left as we want, really. Like,
I don't think you'd be. I think celebrities is not the answer. And if celebrities is the
answer. But is an answer in America, though?
I don't think celebrities is leaning further into the problem. Yeah, but the right can do it. But if we do celebrities on the left, then we can see to the right.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's the wrong celebrities. It's the wrong celebrities that the left back on. And I say the left is in the Democrats.
It should not be celebrities.
No, it depends. It depends on the celebrity. Like name recognition. Well, everyone who's got name recognition is really a celebrity. But
the problem is, as soon as it's a celebrity, it can't be not a celebrity in the future.
I mean, we're there.
Yeah.
Anyway, off the politics, on to it.
Okay, all right. That aside, like the cool thing, right? I feel they're getting the Naboo back.
I knew.
We were hopeful. Oh. Okay, I appear to have.
Facing really hard, or he's disconnected.
Sorry, he's disconnected.
We so, thought you had a very good poker face.
No, that wasn't a poker face. That was a "what the fuck is he on about" face.
No, it was like
that'd work. That'd
everyone work was going face. A bit weird, and I was going, and then it just suddenly went. You know?
I think my Chris theory is that Fred Johnson is going to get the Naboo. He's going to get the proto molecule, pen pineapple papple pen, and he's going to. I don't know which one. They're both grimacing now.
I don't know what you're talking about with the pineapple. That's the...
It's the meme, you know? I have pen, I have pineapple, put them together. Pineapple, pineapple, pen, pineapple, apple, pen. It teaches you a word in a language I have no idea what it is.
Oh, I see. You're in the wrong spot again. Sorry, Chris. That's my
Christopher.
Fault.
Always taking my fucking seat. Or your seat, somebody's seat.
No, your seat. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that Johnson is going to use the protomolecule on the Naboo. Maybe it'll be a living ship, maybe it'll be a living space station, maybe it'll be a living environment of some sort, because it is big and it's got the...
They did want, you know, essentially a terraformed interior.
Exactly. So terraforming molecule. Because I don't, like, maybe, you know, like... Here's the thing, right? Fred Johnson is a military man and he is an earther, albeit a belter earther, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and it is easy to assume that because of his background, he would think of the protomolecule as a weapon. Like, he talks about it as a weapon, he describes it as a weapon.
Yeah.
He even looks at the Naboo and sort of looks almost a little bit like that as a weapon.
Yeah.
You know? And it's, so he's got that mindset. And they talk about it like military people in the last series with science guy and military science guy. And their infinite romance that I mean, they might be alive. Like, we didn't see them die.
Yeah.
I think the implication is that they've died now from the broadcasts.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll say it with my own eyes, you know? Like, same with Miller, same with Julie. Like, it's, you know, maybe they're all jumbled up together in a Borg of sorts.
In a Borg?
Borg they're soup. Borged. They're Borged. Something like that. But it looked like it was you know, at the end of season two, it looked like it was a mystical, almost in, like, it wasn't sad. It was happy. It was like, oh my God, we're transcending.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's maybe the spirit of Lord Jesus Christ actually came down from heaven and saved them.
By his grace.
Mm. That's, or the proto-molecule. Possible. Or is the proto-molecule God?
Hamish's face.
I don't know. I'm thinking proto-molecule, Naboo. Put them together, you're going to get something pretty interesting there, aren't
what
you?
What have you got? Bibbity bobbity boo.
Boo. Pineapple. No, pen, pineapple, apple, pen.
Just so the audience knows, at least one of us is extremely tired.
But which one?
Yes. Guess correctly, you win no prize.
Because I don't know about you, but I was up several times this night listening to the fucking wind blowing shit around another.
Yeah. Usually I find that wind noise is, I find it very soothing and it sends me to sleep, but for some reason it didn't.
I think it's the government warning put something in my brain that was like, this is a bad wind.
The wind is coming to get you.
The weirdest thing that happened with the wind, like people's bins and recycling things and garden furniture was flying all over the place. But the weirdest thing that happened was there was a knock at my door, like a multiple knock. And I was like, what the fuck? And it was late enough in the morning that it could have been somebody like a neighbour or something or whatever. So I got up and went out. And all that was there was my recycling bin with a lid there. And I worked out what must have happened was the lid of the recycling bin was like stuck inside the bin with the one for paper and cardboard. It's like a flexible one that was shoved in beside.
Something so I love here when it gets windy. Like, you know,
slapped against the door a few times.
My street's kind of like quite, you know, for a village, quite long and straight, and like the surrounding area is quite open, and it runs east-west. So when it's windy, the wind just goes straight down the street, basically. And occasionally you hear like somebody's bin or something just going down the street, like dong, 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 into the distance. And it's great. Love that sound.
Could be a wind golem.
That's terrifying.
Actually, I'm just thinking now, Hamish's mystery knock could be that his and various neighbours' recycling got blown out to the road, and one kind Samaritan just went out there first thing in the morning on the way to work or something. It was like, all right, I'll just pick everyone's in and just go.
Imagine the wind, something bouncing against the door with the wind, right?
Yeah. It could be anything. That's the excitement of wind.
It's the wonder.
No, it was the lid banging against the
lid. Right.
Mystery solved. Well, okay. But another mystery.
I don't believe in magic, I'm afraid. Sorry.
So it was ghosts.
Yeah.
It was wind elementals.
Wind elementals.
Lie down. He is so restless.
Hamish is talking to ghosts.
Yeah.
Hey, French ghosty, by the way. Good to see you haunting the halls as usual.
Right, what have we not got? Because we're on a long show. Yeah, we missed a lot.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, so can someone remind me why she's not really with Dawes so much anymore? Is it because
Fred was building something, she said, and Dawes's direction goes nowhere, something along, it wasn't there, but better word.
Still like the direction that he was going in or something.
Yeah.
Peanut, excuse me a second, sorry.
That's okay. So what we've got here, so this is interesting from Fred Johnson's point of view, that he is continuing to make overtures to Anderson Dawes. He's not trying to usurp him. He's not trying to get rid of him. He's trying to work with him, even though Dawes...
And he uses that belt or phrase.
I think that was part of Naomi's intent, was to force them, to force them to work together.
You actually did say that before.
Yeah, and I think that's... I think they all recognise that they've got to work together, but they're just distrustful and competitive and,
Yeah, absolutely. They do have to work together because of the belt, or they got to you know, have a loose... Well, yeah, because they're a loose coalition. They're not even...
Yeah.
But the thing is now, is it makes sense to me, particularly because...
It does. Not does. Fred Johnson has got this grand plan of bringing it all together, though.
Mm.
I mean, he makes that speech in the episode.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're going to be a nation.
He doesn't necessarily demand to be the figurehead of that.
No, he doesn't. He's not egotistical about it.
I think there's something inherently about that that is unappealing to the Belter mindset that is anarchistic and is very, you know, split, fragmented and decentralized. And we're all, you know, we're all our own personalities kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I know that that Fred Johnson goes against the grain on this one, but like maybe necessarily so.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because the thing is, and this is kind of a problem with modern governments. I remember someone going on, like they're talking about this on a news show or something, where they were saying like, we don't have like big building projects anymore, and what some people's hope with High Speed Rail 2 was. Once we managed to get that down, we'd have all of the, we'd have redeveloped the expertise, the cadence, the attitude to then
acceptance and stuff.
All that kind of stuff, the political will, all that kind of stuff, to like build other big rail projects that might actually be, you know.
It doesn't even have to be rail, it can be, you know, the engineering in general.
Anything, bridges. I love going over a big bridge. I feel like a child, just like in awe. It's like, how fucking big have we made this that fucking cars drive on? Even the fucking M47 bridge, which I'm sure by today's standards is relatively modest as far as bridges go, but I just like, this is amazing. Yeah. This is like, take someone from the medieval times and send them in a car over a bridge. It's like, these are our bridges now. It's like fucking amazing. And it's just like, and I like, it feels like it's been a while since we've ever done something like that.
The Channel Tunnel was kind of like a standout one, but
that was amazing. Yeah,
like but you can only do that kind of thing if you put investment into it, and everybody that owns everything now doesn't want to invest in the infrastructure. They want to suck all the money they can out and then bugger off. And people will say, "Oh, it's competition." It's but no, it's not. It's one or two. It's one or two people. Literally, are in charge of something for a while, suck everything they can out of it, then fuck off.
Yeah,
it's not like it's the same company.
When we privatize everything, they're not interested in just building for the future anymore. They're just trying to make as much profits as possible. Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, because the thing is about competition. Is that there is just as much incentive to nobble your competitors as there is to do anything yourself. And in fact, in a lot of cases, it's easier to nobble your competitors than it is to actually raise yourself. That's why I think that competition as a concept is pretty flawed.
It all amalgamates into one or two large conglomerates owning it.
Either nobble your competitors or buy them.
Which is kind of like, you know, six of one half done the other in reality in the long run. So like, you know, big state projects or something like that, I think there's a place for them, even as a morale boost.
Just as 100% employment all the time. Just get people tidying up roads and
show off, you know. Just like
I mean, they talk about making Britain great and all that sort of bollocks, you know, the sort of the MAGA version or whatever our MAGA version is for people like Farage, but obviously they're not interested in any of that. They'll talk the talk, but they have no interest.
That was the one good thing about Biden was the infrastructure bill. Didn't go far enough, and you know the usual caveats, but at least he had an infrastructure bill. That was something in the right direction for once.
Yeah, I think it's nice when you've got symbols to hang that on, though, like bridges, tunnels, you know, big things. Just like a little bit of a vanity project in a way, you know,
we were talking a while back about the, I can't remember, it's like in 1957 or something, like Festival of Britain, and they built like huge, like public monumental sculptures, and they were abstract, they were actually challenging, they weren't just some shitty, you know,
whatever. I know what we should do. We should build an Eiffel Tower, but bigger. Just to piss the French off.
I don't like the Eiffel Tower.
No, make it nice. Like this, make it nicer.
It's not very nice looking. But... Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Blackpool.
You've not been to Blackpool?
It's not bigger than the Eiffel Tower.
No,
right?
But you know. No.
Yeah. I mean, make it nicer or whatever. Yeah.
Something. Like, I know what you mean. Something along the, you know, Statue. I think Statue of Liberty is a very beautiful statue. Actually, the French. French made that as well.
I presume you mean the one in New York.
Well, all of them. They're all beautiful. But yeah, that's the one. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, again,
that's the famous one, I suppose.
Instead of going to war with France that we do from time to time, let's just like have a pissing contest. Why not? Just for, you know.
Well, that's what America and the Soviet Union did in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, but there was a lot more of a threatening undertone. I want something that's more like...
Well, but the thing is, at the same time, they're also like, there's beautiful monumental sculptures in the Soviet Union because they were like, you know, they had... Mm. It was a pride in what they were trying to build. Yeah, for anybody who's going to criticize the fucking flag, the Soviet Union had its problems. Yeah, but they made big monumental artwork just to make it. Mm. You know, because we're proud of who we are, and let's make the place beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, and also there feels like one of the things that I feel was really bad about Tory austerity. It felt like stuff was decaying.
Don't say was.
Like,
Well, okay, the thing about austerity in government...
Tory austerity that's still happening.
Still happening. Yeah, it feels like things are just fading away. They're rotting away. They're getting worse.
But that's what they want. They want things like the NHS to fall apart so they can then say, look, that doesn't work. Exactly. We've got a solution, and that's to sell everything.
Going back to a discussion we had somewhere else, I think that was one of the positive things that religion did, was it was a reason to build beautiful things. Whereas now it's
stuff,
like the only people who build big are corporations building boring, fucking ugly, cost-effective skyscrapers, you know.
Or putting cars into space.
Like building something just to be beautiful. Or monumental or inspiring.
Yeah, it's not inspiring when it's just for one person's dick waving, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be all of our dick waving. It should be a big collective.
Waving all of our flaps.
Well, that's
and
what
dicks.
You know. The moon missions. You know, they were. That's kind of what they were, really.
Yeah. I mean, I bet, like, watching the moon landings for the first time, like, you know, even though there was the Cold War undertone, surely it must have felt as close together as a humankind.
That is how people talk about it.
They do. And they toured the whole world. They went to the Soviet Union. You know, that's one of the fucking, you know, the things about people, the conspiracy theorists about, they didn't go and everything. It's like, of course they fucking did, or else the Soviet Union would have found all the evidence to pointed it to them, shown the world, you know. But the three of them,
also,
the three astronauts,
it would have been harder to fake it
went
than to
together,
all, like,
you know, they went to communist countries as well as everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So
you hear
people, you know, people from the Soviet Union at the time talking about it as a unifying thing.
And of course, this ties in, of course, to the expanse, because that's what Mars is all on about, isn't it? They've got the building, you know, and you know, you look at like your Bobbies.
Yeah, Mars is on the up, whereas Earth is sort of. Decayed.
Well, I mean, the other way to unify people, and, you know, this is kind of the purpose of the Cold War, is the unifying threat. And, you know, the proton molecule is potentially that unifying whatever.
Well, I mean, you could say that's the reason for war against Mars as well.
But then you always need an enemy after you've defeated the next enemy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I mean, this gets into Amos stuff later. But it depends who you see as us. You know what I mean? Like there was a time when Britain was just little tribes, and then it was seven kingdoms, and then it was, you know, the United Kingdom, and then, you know, and then Scotland, surely, England, Wales. We all love each other.
But isn't the true goal, as utopian as it may be, is to be like all at least all human beings, be it from Mars, for Earth, for anywhere else, to be as one people, right? Now, I know obviously there's a million hurdles to that idea. But surely that's the direction we want.
In terms of thinking of ourselves as like, I don't know what words to use, but we should. That's us.
And
thinking of our own interests, it should be that.
And I'll go a step further. If aliens visit us, I think we should be friendly to them.
Our default posture should be: do you want a cup of tea? Which is
not what's going to happen.
Well, there was
depends
that.
Where they, depends you know, where they show
remember,
up.
Remember what was the Jeremy Beadle candid camera type show called? Back in the day.
Beadle's about.
There was a Beadle's about where they faked a moon faked an alien crash in this like old lady's back garden, basically. And she comes out like proper, and then this alien comes out of the ship and she says to it, "Would you like a cup of tea?" And it's fucking love. It's so fucking lovely. Like
I like that kind of thing because it undermines wankers like him.
No, exactly, exactly.
You're not
laughing
at people, and, you know.
Yes.
No, I'm not. I'm practical joking, especially when the unwary is just fucking.
Yeah. Mm.
But that nice lady should do very well in government, I think. Or yeah, as like
that's who we want. That's who we want. Yeah.
This is why I've always felt, and people are, you know, this might stir up a hornet's nest or whatever. I kind of feel that Snoop Dogg is a good ambassador between Wales and the United States, because he is, I mean, obviously he's American, but
what's his connection to Wales? I don't.
He loves Wales.
Like, does he? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's a good bloke. He seems like a nice guy, and you know.
He loves, there was a time when this
I think
guy,
he's not, you know, not all of his life, but I think.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, he's probably a complicated chap, but he seems to me to be the kind of person that really wants to make overtures, right? He wants to reach out and connect with people.
Yeah.
And specifically, people that are not like him, right? Like, that's, you know, like all kinds of people, seem to be welcome at his table. So.
Yeah.
And there was a news story about this guy that grew the world, not the world, like the biggest. Turnip or the biggest Swede, I think it was, and then Snoop Dogg heard about this, and he was like, "I want to talk to this guy who knows how to grow massive fucking vegetables." and he made a video that he put on the internet, and he asked this winner of this competition, "I'm touring in the UK. I'd like to give you some tickets, and maybe we can chat about like different gardening techniques, because you know I do like a bit of gardening myself, and I like that he was doing it in front of a, I think he was doing it in front of a green screen of just cannabis, like it's just like, and I'll send you a clip of the news thing itself, because Snoop Dogg has occasionally been spotted wearing Welsh rugby shirts, you know, like it seems genuinely like he's.
Did you know? I'm sorry, go.
And basically, they interviewed the guy, and he was like, "Oh, he invited me back for a smoke, and we talked about gardening for a little bit." And then the news reporter was like, "Oh, I hope you were just smoking cigarettes." He goes, "Oh no!"
I was going to say, it's not such a strange thing for an American to be wearing a Welsh rugby shirt when you consider that I wear American football shirts and things sometimes, you know, people wear baseball and American football and basketball type regalia.
I'm sure he's personally distasteful to all of us, but Ryan Reynolds with the football team thing that he bought in there, and he has become attached to Wales, and in the new Deadpool film there is Welsh Pool.
There's Welsh Pool,
a prominent character, and like
I've nothing against Ryan Reynolds particularly.
You know, actually, I think the whole thing is a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit problematic that whole we bought a little football club or a bit of sports club wherever sort of thing. There's a few.
Oh yeah, especially if you watch the show, it's like
he's
a multimillionaire. And he's like, look at these, heartwarming stories of poor people.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like,
under that sort of liberal, what's the word for when you're
facade?
Not quite in sync of reality?
Oh,
cognitive dissonance. Underneath that liberal cognitive dissonance, I do think he does genuinely care about social issues. He seems to love Wales. He's an ambassador for Wales, and I think these things are good. Yeah.
It's
reliance on celebrity.
It's a bit of a poverty tourism thing.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. Yeah,
it's a little bit. I guess the important thing is what do the people of Wrexham have to say about it?
Yeah,
they seem to. I mean, this is based on a TV show, which is made by them. So
yeah, I mean that's another. Yeah.
I mean, I've heard generally positive things because the thing is we have a royal family, right? We are always in the shadow.
Do
of,
you?
Of,
mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, not in Wales. I mean, in the UK.
Wales,
Duke of Edinburgh. Oh. You're all part of it. You can't opt out.
Fuck off.
I wish we could. No, we still have.
No, I
you know what really in fucks me off with them, especially like the BBC doing it, is this sort of thing where, because it does take me a second to go, who? And they'll say something like, Kate does this, or William does that, or something who the fuck's Kate?
Yeah.
Kate who?
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah, they fucking just expect us to...
my sister? What's she up to?
Yeah, I know.
But I do, just
to round off the Ryan Reynolds thing, like, them owning it and, like, running it as a football club versus, you know, all the previous owners and running it purely as a money-making enterprise is a step up for the fans, for sure, you know.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's vibes. There are good ways to do it, bad ways to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of it is theatre anyway. But like, for sports, it's theatre. So, if he's respectful about it, and if he's not exploiting or being too
exploited, as a rule, we should do away with celebrities.
Yeah, definitely.
That category of person should not exist.
So, can we just possibly, because we're at 2 hours and 10 minutes now, maybe round up a wee bit more about the Expanse before one of us falls asleep on the
show. So, yeah, Fred Johnson's a builder. Anderson Dawes is a knocker-downer. Both have their places, but I think Fred Johnson is more inspiring in that regard, even though it's through a lens of Earth militarism, which, even though he knows about and probably checks regularly, I don't know what that sound was.
I think it's me breathing.
Oh, right, okay.
My nose did a whistle.
It sounded like a very tiny person screaming. Is there a tiny person? Yeah. I think that, like, building stuff, to me, as in terms of my vibes and feelings and stuff, building stuff like the Naboo is pretty inspiring.
It's
a little bit like Machiavellian.
Well, the Naboo is possibly one of those humanity,
defining things,
yeah, but biggest ship ever built. You know?
But it's like the Machiavellian politics, isn't it? It's like you're versus being loved versus being feared. Like Anderson Dawes might be feared, Fred Johnson might be loved.
I think Dawes is loved as well. I think they're both feared.
Do you think it might be the other way around? Actually, Dawes is loved and Anderson.
No, I think they're both. And, I think they're both. Both
aspects of both.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's any notes I had that might disappear before we finish this. Avasarala having to deal with high G and getting the drugs and everything. So get me off this ship. That was quite funny.
Yeah,
you know, and
she does not enjoy. That would be me in that situation. Yeah.
I don't think I would be.
Yeah.
And oh, God, also the stow your tits and pucker up line was excellent.
We haven't talked about one of the cliffhangers as well, is Holden sort of realizing that he's been a bit of a jerk, and he's like, we haven't done fuck all to find Prax's daughter.
I think that's Holden finally coming around and not just apologizing and then carrying on being what he's being. That's him realizing
that's him actually becoming himself again.
This was actually wrong with me. I should have been caring about the kid.
Yeah, and he's like, well, admit, it's like we just lied to him and we've done nothing.
I like that moment.
And I think even it feels like Prax is even a bit taken aback going.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's so.
I don't think Prax was ever expecting them really to care about.
He said that explicitly as well at some point. Really care about my daughter. You just care about this. But you know. Well,
it's along for the ride, hoping you can find something out.
Yeah, they're going in the same direction anyway, sort of thing.
So I think I like Prax. I look forward to seeing more of Prax. I hope he doesn't die in the next episode. I hope he at least survives out this season, or at least, he will. Like, that's anti-poker face.
is that your mum's sister?
Anti-poker for sars.
Let's fucking end it. I need a cup of tea.
Yeah, I could do with a cuppa. All right.
Right, Sid. Chris. I think we've probably missed something, but we sometimes do anyway. But I'm glad we did get to say stow your tits and pucker up. Because that was Bobby's best line. One more Bobby bit that was good. There's two actually.
Oh, Bobby Belter or Bobby Dazzler. Bobby Dazzler.
when she comes into the, she comes out of the the door to the room, and Avasarala just goes, well done ma'am. And also when she does, that's really cool, when she takes the she takes something off the suit and then just stands there and it all unpacks.
That's pretty cool.
Right, awesome. Okay.
Right, cut it.